It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Marcy's Law, an amendment to the Pennsylvania Constitution, which voters apparently approved overwhelmingly in November 2019, has been thrown out by Commonwealth Court on a 3-2 ruling. It would have enshrined into the state constitution rights for crime victims that include notification about the case and being allowed to attend and to weigh in during plea hearings, sentencing, and parole proceedings, among other things. Jennifer Storm is the acting victim advocate for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Jennifer, welcome to The Confluence.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And Mary Catherine Roper is the deputy legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania. Mary Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the pros and cons of the amendment, the reason I said apparently passed is because the state Supreme Court ruled the votes could not be counted, but the question was already on the November 2019 ballot. So, Jennifer, in a majority opinion, Commonwealth Court Judge Patricia McCullough said the proposed amendment, quote, simply embraces too many disparate matters to effectively convey its import to voters within the 75 words mandated by statute for a ballot question, end quote. That's bundling too many changes together. So your response, Jennifer?
So obviously we respectfully disagree. We do believe that the ballot question adequately captured the single subject at hand, which is victims' rights. We felt that the plain English statement that the Attorney General's office put out was very clear, very concise. It delineated those rights that were going to be elevated into from the statute into the Constitution. And obviously 1.7 million voters weren't confused, and they voted in favor of that.
Mary Catherine, the ACLU opposes Marcy's Law. Is that because there were too many separate issues combined in this ballot question, or you don't think any of the provisions of Marcy's Law should be in the Constitution?
Well, we've never said that none of the provisions of Marcy's Law should be in the Constitution, and the court did not rule that victims' rights couldn't be in the Constitution. What the court said was, you can't cram 15 changes into a single question for the voters to answer yes or no. Our clients are people who said, hey, I'd have voted for some of these things, but not the rest of these things. But what the legislature did was, frankly, didn't do its job. Instead of saying, voters, would you like this change? And would you like this change? And would you like this change? The legislature said, would you like these 15 changes? Answer yes or no.
Jennifer, do you think it would have been too convoluted or of a ballot to have different changes as separate questions so that voters could say, yes, I support this, no, I don't support that, et cetera?
I do. And I think our legislature knew exactly what they were doing when they passed Marcy's Law, not once, but twice, almost unanimously in both consecutive sessions. And that is that victims' rights as a matter are combined. I mean, to parse them out and to do that many separate constitutional amendments would be arduous. It would be a waste of taxpayer dollars. The issue that the individuals that adjoined the lawsuit took issue with are ones that are already in existing law, and they don't have any challenges. So one of the things that I know the ACLU and some of the individuals that were associated with the case took issue to was this issue of pretrial discovery, when the Supreme Court of the United States has made it very clear that there's no constitutional right to pretrial discovery to begin with. So essentially, we were just taking what is in existing statute now, which has been an existing statute for decades in the state of Pennsylvania, and elevating that to that of the Constitution. So I disagree. I think that the courts did not strike this down on the merit. It really is coming down to a procedural technical issue. But quite frankly, all of these rights already exist and are living and breathing, but unfortunately they're being abused.
Mary Catherine.
While the United States Constitution may not give a right to pretrial discovery, the Pennsylvania Constitution does give defendants in criminal cases the right to pretrial discovery by use of subpoena. And that would have been changed by Marcy's Law. That's just one of the many changes that
would have been made.
But it
wouldn't have been.
More importantly, there are currently laws that are supposed to protect victims that are not being enforced. The Crime Victims Act is not consistently enforced in terms of giving victims notice of court proceedings and other things that affect their interests. You don't need a constitutional amendment to do that. What you need is the legislature to do its job.
Jennifer?
So I do believe the legislature has done their job. And the challenge comes, and anyone who, you know this, when you have a court challenge, so we've got statutory rights for victims. And yes, we have lots of rights that are not being enforced. And we also have victims that have no legal standing to enforce their rights. And when the Commonwealth attorneys who are supposed to enforce those rights, or the prisons, or the probation agent, or the law enforcement officer, because victims' rights are delineated to various justice partners at various different points, when they try to enact standing on behalf of an issue, they're up against a constitutional right for the accused. And if you know anything about a court of law, it doesn't matter how well you craft your argument. If you have a statutory right and someone else has a constitutional right, that constitutional right wins procedurally every day over that statutory right. Victims should have their rights fully enforceable at the state level. And the only way to do that is to put them in the Constitution so that a judge can make a balanced and fair and accurate assessment of those rights. Otherwise, every day, that judge has to say, I'm sorry, constitutional right wins over the statutory right. And the victim loses every single time, regardless of who's the person petitioning on their behalf.
What the proponents of this amendment have said is that it doesn't actually change the defendant's rights, so you don't have to vote on each of those changes. But Ms. Storm just said that victims need rights to outweigh the defendant's rights when these issues come up in court. That means changing the defendant's rights. And I don't actually agree with that, because I don't think defendants have any right to prevent notice to a victim, or stop a victim from being compensated. But the point is that if you are in fact going to set up a battle between victims' rights and defendants' rights, you are trying to change a number of things, and the voters should be able to vote on each of those changes separately.
So do you expect this to be back in court, Jennifer?
Yes, we will be filing. There's an appeal being filed as we speak, and we absolutely anticipate and expect the Supreme Court to take this up and to rule in our favor.
Should this issue be remedied constitutionally, or can it be done through statute if those statutes are truly enforced and supported? Mary Catherine?
Yes, I think that the interests of victims can be protected through statutes. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any victims' rights in the Constitution. There may be some that can only be protected through constitutional action. But honestly, putting something in the Constitution doesn't suddenly make it happen. You still need laws to put it into effect. You need law enforcement officials to actually follow the laws. Why don't we just skip to that step?
Jennifer?
The Constitution of Pennsylvania is our values. And if we truly believe in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that victims' rights matter, then they belong in that very fabric. And so when anyone has to go to court and defend a victim's rights or enforce a victim right, they're doing so from that fabric, that value statement, which is our Constitution. If we believe that victims' rights matter, they belong in the Constitution. There's no harm in placing them there with all of the other things that we believe matter as a constitutional right in this Commonwealth.
Mary Catherine, you think that some points that were brought up in Marcy's Law could be enacted into the Constitution or adopted into the Constitution?
I'm sure some of them could, and this is the problem. This is what the lawsuit is about, not whether there should be victims' rights in the Constitution, but whether you can take a 500-word amendment that makes a whole slew of changes to the Constitution and say to the voters, yes or no. That's all you get to say, yes or no. You don't get to pick ones, which ones you think are good ideas and which ones you don't think are good ideas. It doesn't matter what I think is a good idea. It matters what the voters think is a good idea, and they never got to say, I like this one, I don't like that one. They didn't get to have their vote.
Jennifer, final word.
Well, actually, they did, and 1.7 million people did vote in favor. It was one of the biggest vote getters that we've ever seen on a ballot question.
But it wasn't all or nothing. It wasn't all or nothing, correct, though?
It wasn't, but it was very clearly spelled out in the plain English statement provided by the Attorney General's office.
And finally, how do you see this being resolved, Jennifer?
So our hope is obviously that the Supreme Court will look at this and see it differently. And if not, then we have to go back and look at a different way of approaching this. I mean, at the end of the day, right now, victims' rights are not enforceable in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And that is unfortunate, and it's just unconscionable. So we need to find a mechanism. We believe Marcy's Law is the mechanism, and we're hoping for success.
Mary Catherine, how do you think this is going to get resolved?
Well, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania will decide whether or not this particular initiative is ever validated, but there's nothing to stop the legislature today, tomorrow, or next week from taking real action to protect victims by passing laws that enforce their rights.
Mary Catherine Roper is the Deputy Legal Director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania, and Jennifer Storm is the Acting Victim Advocate for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you so much.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. After months of waiting and states lobbying the federal government to take action, the federal government passed another coronavirus relief package shortly before Christmas. The bill issues a one-time $600 stimulus check to Americans and provides some aid for small businesses. But with benefits seemingly in limbo until Congress passed the legislation, some residents in need turned to local aid groups. One of those organizations is the United Way of Southwestern Pennsylvania. Jolie Design is the Chief Programming and Policy Officer. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Jolie, when the pandemic hit, was United Way ready?
Was anybody ready? Well, I would say that maybe more ready than most. We had a lot of the infrastructure in place that we were able to, you know, build on and leverage and move quickly to make things happen. One of those was our 211 helpline, which is, you know, a 24/7 helpline.
Right. So you had the infrastructure in place, but were you ready for the volume?
Well, I mean, our volume at 211 literally doubled almost overnight. On a typical day, we would handle, you know, 400 or 500 contacts, and we were, you know, 800 to 1,000 contacts. April, May, went down a little bit, you know, as we moved into late summer and as more resources came into the market, but has been ticking back up.
You say ticking back up. Is this due to other sources of assistance running out or people waiting for renewed programs or what?
You know, hard to say. I think there's a lot, concern about was there going to be, additional help, but also, you know, December is just a hard month. The holidays are hard. And I think that definitely contributed to that. Also, you know, we're going to be seeing some hard hits with utility bills, as we start to move into the colder months, mm-hmm. Even though there's a moratorium, but it's going to be lifted. So,
So Jolie, were you able to help people in a couple of different ways? The usual resources, information, assistance that you provide to people in need, but also maybe because of the volume that increased, you brought on some people as temporary workers, and so they got some additional income to help themselves.
Absolutely. So both on the 211 side, where we brought on additional folks, but also a couple of the initiatives that we did on the other side of the house, we worked with PNC Bank, with the county, with Eaton Park, and we got close to over 800,000 meals out to folks in need between March and the end of December. Those restaurants were able to keep employees and keep their books, you know, in the black because they were creating these meals and getting them out. We also created a regional transportation network, working with, I think there are 5 or 6 different agencies that we ended up contracting with as vendors. We're still contracting with them.
What is in high demand now, and has that maybe changed from earlier in the pandemic?
You know, it's an interesting question, Kevin. And when I've been asked a lot during this pandemic is what's changed. And really, from a 2-1-1 perspective, it's the same. It's basic needs and why people are calling. It's rent, it's utilities, it's food. It's just more intense.
Julie, we're 10 months into the pandemic. How's the United Way planning for the lingering, the long-term effects of the pandemic and the needs of people from this region?
We're moving more to, you know, be much more thoughtful, much more strategic than kind of the way we and everyone else were kind of bowled over in the beginning. So we've been doing a couple things. One is that we've started issuing this Community Pulse Report, which is a partnership with United Way, the Poise Foundation, and Allies for Children, where we're looking at national, regional, local data, 2-1-1 data to say, what's next? Like, what do we really need to be worried about? It's so easy when you're overwhelmed to just, you know, pay attention to whatever comes through your inbox first or whoever's screaming the loudest, but really looking at data to get us to, be very strategic in our resources. We've also started, this kind of talking series, we're calling it The Question Before Us, where we're then starting to dive deep on and bring in some experts to help us think through, like, what are these issues that are coming up? The ones that's coming up in January is around, you know, childcare and women in the workforce. The number of women in the workforce has declined significantly. It's at its lowest point in decades. All parents face this issue, but disproportionately women leaving the workforce because, you know, there's not really great solutions for kids right now. Childcare systems are really strained. They can't have as many kids for safety reasons. And they don't have as much money coming in because they don't have as many kids. If we don't pay attention to them now, we're going to have some real serious issues with our workforce and our economy going forward. So that's where we've been steering, is really trying to, okay, we've been blown over before. let's start to, you know, kind of get up on the balcony and think strategically and use data and our relationships with the business community, with government, with our agencies. What are people seeing and hearing? And how do we address those things together?
Julie Desine is the Chief Programming and Policy Officer of the United Way of Southwestern Pennsylvania. Julie, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Greatly appreciated.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.